Hello and welcome to Minigame, a podcast about video game stories and why we love them. I'm Michael Ferris. Instead of my usual kind of episode this week, instead I have an interview with Connor Rush of Fire Games, developer of Summerland. And we discuss his new game, developing a game in the public limelight, and a little bit on the afterlife. So I hope you enjoy, and thank you very much for listening. Connor, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. Like, really, it was awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's a total honor to have you on the show here. And if you don't mind, could you, for those who don't know, can you introduce yourself a little bit about you and a little bit about Summerland?
Yeah, awesome. So my name's Connor Rush. As you said before, I'm 19. I'm a college student right now. And I am the founder and CEO of Fire Games, which is a independent game studio that I made when I was like 12.
Wow.
It's a one-man studio right now. And I just released my third game called Summerland, one word. It is, I don't love the term, but it's a walking simulator in which you are a detective named Matthew as you traverse the afterlife, going through themes of morality and ethics, as well as delving into, again, the afterlife, what happens when we die. And it's a very, in a sense, it's a very subjective type of game. You get what you put in, I guess.
Sure.
It's very up to interpretation, and I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, and you should be. It's very ambitious for being such a young developer.
Oh, thank you.
I played plenty of games made by more than one person by much more experienced developers that are less interesting, less compelling than what you deliver with Summerland. So thank you very much for developing the game, and thank you for actually, for those who don't know, releasing it for free on both Steam and itch.io.
No, I'm really glad you like it. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you. And a little bit about you here. I first heard about Summerland through your TikTok account, and you've been sort of documenting a little bit on the steps of the development of Summerland through the past few months here. What inspired you to use your TikTok account in such a way? Because I've not seen, even from more seasoned developers, them using really TikTok either at all or even documenting the development of their games.
So one of the accounts I follow right now, his name is, I'm going to mispronounce this, Quasi TV. Mm-hmm. Like, and he developed, it's an awesome game. It just got ported to consoles called Shotgun Farmers. If you've ever played it, it's a really interesting first person shooter. You like fire seeds that plants new ammo. It's really cool. And he got like this huge following through TikTok. He's over 1 million followers right now.
Oh, wow.
Crazy success. And I was starting to amass a bit of a following. I think I had about 10K at that time. And I was just making like comedy videos. I was writing sketches and I thought they were pretty funny. But I thought, you know what? I have 10,000 people here and I'm making this game. Why not announce it? And I decided to announce it. I was waiting. I had this like waiting period. I knew what I wanted to do because the game needed voice actors. And I was like, I see all these videos of people saying like, I really want to be a voice actor and don't know how to do it. Like, how do I? I was like, all right, I got a market here.
Yeah.
I recorded this minute long video explaining this is my game. This is what it's going to be. I need voice actors. Here's how you audition. Video blows up. It's like 3.5 million views, million likes. I got over like 4,500 auditions.
Wow.
And then I just got a ton of followers from there. So the traction just kept building and building. And I was able to just keep posting updates. People kept coming. And yeah, it just kind of spiraled from there. And now Summerland's by far my most successful game.
Wow. I was just curious because that's the video that I first saw, you know, because it did blow up in such a way. Do you think that going through that method had advantages for you that, aside from just the volume of auditions that you've had, did that have any other advantages than other probably more traditional casting methods?
I think so. Because have you ever heard of the site Casting Call Club?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I held the auditions. And I love going through that because you get so much talent that you would never hear otherwise. Because it's such an open platform and anyone is able to sign up. I mean, granted, with that, you're going to get some pretty bad auditions.
Right. Yeah.
That happens with any role, especially when you're paying. Because a lot of Casting Call Club auditions are like free type casting. But I offered a payment, which brought in a lot of different voice actors. And going through TikTok, again, it got a lot of those people that want to become voice actors and weren't able to start. I had so many people messaging me saying, this is what got me started. And like, this is why I started voice acting because of this. And now I've auditioned for like a bunch of stuff. So not even just for me, but for other people, I think it's been awesome because I've gotten a lot of people into voice acting from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure like casting that kind of a wide net sure got a whole host of different kind of people. And developing a game in such a public way, did that have like any unique challenges? Did that have any kind of, did that increase like expectations for yourself? Or how did you manage to sort of balance being a developer and being a public figure?
I see the TikTok thing was kind of a double-edged sword, and it was more positive than negative, and most of the negatives were just self-imposed. Like, obviously it brought a lot of attention to the game, and I'm insanely thankful it brought all this attention to the game, but also that made me worried, and it gave me some awful imposter syndrome, because I felt that all of these people are now on my account expecting this amazing product that I'm afraid I can't offer. And that was a lot of pressure on myself. And I posted multiple videos after that saying like, guys, I just want to remind you, I'm 18. I was 18 at the time, and I'm making this by myself. So like, give me a little leeway here. It's not going to be a AAA product.
Yeah.
and I, you know, most everyone understood that. And any of that pressure was put on myself by me. And I realize that now that everyone was pretty much expecting what it was. If not, they were expecting less than what it was. I think I broke some expectations, which I'm very happy about. But yeah, it was stressful. It was a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And like, I'm just curious because you mentioned that, you know, prior to you being a developer kind of, you know, blowing up in such a way, you've done, you know, sketches and music and things like that. What sort of drove you to, I guess, just being a game developer in general, but also being a developer and being like, hey, here's this project I have, you know, come be a part of it. What about development either drew you to development, or why do you think that blew up in ways that you being artistic and other methods may not have in the same way?
I think it's the opportunity of it, because I found that people on TikTok, I'm not trying to sound like some mogul who knows what he's talking about. Like sure. I'm just inferring here. It seems like people on TikTok like to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're offering something to them where they can do something they've always wanted to do, like they're going to latch onto that. Like so many people messaged me. They're like, man, I'll do this for free.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to pay me. I'll be in this project because so many people want to voice act.
Mm-hmm.
That's like when people who are good visual artists will say like, I'm drawing my followers, and they get a ton of followers because people want to be included in that. They want that opportunity to be drawn. People wanted that opportunity to be a voice actor. And I think having that like inclusive, opportunistic sort of environment around there, people really latched onto that, and they've stuck around because they know I'm still working on stuff, and they know that there's still ways for them to be involved.
And I guess transitioning a little bit over to actually the game Summerland itself, I'm just actually curious because the game, the opening of the game is actually very shocking way of you're just in an empty room. Here's a phone call, and you have no idea what to expect. And we're introduced to a character, the subtitles can name him as the judge. And we don't really know who this person is other than he's talking to us and he's introducing us to this world. When you were developing this character, what role did you envision him having? Is he a more of like a godlike figure? Is he more of just like an omnipotent character? Or what did you have in mind when developing that kind of character?
When we wrote this, and I say we, I wrote this screenplay and then had a ton of people proofread it and look through it, suggest things. So when we were writing through this, his working name was Kevin. not in any official capacity, but that was just what we were referring to him as. Because we imagine him as, have you seen The Good Place?
Yes, a little bit.
It was super heavy influences from The Good Place in this game. But we imagined him as sort of this just like office worker of the afterlife. There's no denomination or anything. We just imagine like this dude sitting at a desk, and this is like just another Tuesday for him. And he's just kind of fed up with having to do it all the time. And he's like, let's get through my shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of where the judge spawned from. He was voiced by Ryan Beard. And when I was talking to Ryan about voicing this character, I said to them, I was like, listen, I want him to be a total jerk, but like, make it funny.
that comes across a little bit.
I wasn't actually, I was going to be voicing the judge initially. I had a voice role in all of my games prior, and I wasn't auditioning for him. But when I did that public casting call, Ryan Beard, they commented on my post and they said, hey, I'd really like to be a part of it. So I was like, you know, okay. I messaged them and they got back to me and I was like, hey, I got a character I was going to voice, but you'd fit it way better. So here you go. I got some lines, read them off. And yeah, he kind of nailed it.
Did the change of character more happen in sort of that process with, you know, collaborating with them as a voice actor and sort of nailing down the actual tone of the character, or did that more happen just more like on page during writing revisions?
It was a lot of writing revisions. But we did kind of mold the character a bit to fit Ryan's voice, because the character, when you really boil down to it, it's just Ryan.
Sure.
Like this is Ryan. This is how they talk. This is how, like, they inflect their words. Yeah, it kind of just molded to be them.
It's funny because, like, the judge over time gets increasingly curious about Matthew, his actions and what he does. What made actually the decision of him being labeled as the judge? Because he's very curious for someone who is sort of supposed to be more of like a judge. What drove that as sort of the ultimate envisioning of the character?
First, I need to ask, how spoiler talk are we getting in this podcast?
Full spoilers.
All right. Full spoiler alert, and also full interpretation alert, I guess, because I'm going to give like some of like the hidden meanings and stuff that I find in the game that you might not. So
perfect.
I encourage you, the game's free. Go out and play it. Come up with your own thoughts, opinions. I'm going to share what I think is going on. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, the judge kind of is Matthew.
Okay.
And this whole game encapsulates that life flashing before your eyes mentality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In my mind, at the end of the game where Matthew is killed, he's shot. It's the whole game is happening the split second after that happens.
Right.
And it's all going through Matthew's head. And he himself is kind of trying to justify all of these decisions that he's made and try to figure out why he was doing what he was doing. And he's trying to justify it to himself.
Right.
And that's kind of hinted at in the judge's line where he asks if Matthew thinks this is even real.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that the whole game just kind of takes place in Matthew's final moments. And when you walk through that final door into the light, that's Matthew actually dying. Like he's finally died. It's his story's over. And I call the character the judge because Matthew is judging himself. And he's coming to these conclusions on his own through this third person voice.
That makes a lot of sense. I didn't think of that as actually being the interpretation. I always took a little bit actually more literally than that. So it's fascinating that that's, and of course, you know, like you mentioned, you know, it is up for more subjective interpretation.
There's a lot of things left kind of in the air that I wanted people to like walk away with their own feelings on. And I'm not saying what I just said is correct. I'm in no way saying that's correct. And if you have another like thought of what you think happened, like yeah, that's just as valid as what mine is.
And like Matthew himself is actually interesting because you've already touched on this a little bit where he is throughout the process of the game trying to justify his actions to himself because he does some pretty bad stuff. You know,
he definitely does.
He murders a guy, destroys evidence. He endangers his child at the end, but you know, with chase with the police. How do you sort of end up balancing the good and bad sides of Matthew? Because if it goes too far, then Matthew is almost objectively irredeemable. But you also need to have him be sympathetic in order for him to have that interpretation. For you, was it more of a balance, or was it because it was more him trying to justify it to himself that he was allowed to go a little bit too far?
And you're asking some in-depth questions here. Listen, I'm a 19-year-old kid. I didn't write this with any degree under my belt. I was figuring this out as I went. I don't know. There was definitely a balance happening, and I wish I had a better answer. I don't think there was like a method or a formula to how I wrote it. I just kind of felt it out. And I was like, is he too bad? Do I need to like dial him back? And it was kind of just a personal, like how I felt it needed to happen type of thing. And again, I wish I had a better answer, other than I thought it was good.
Okay.
Other than I thought it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And well, it's interesting because he, like you mentioned, he does justify it to himself what the process is that, and his like in his inner monologue always like throughout the whole thing justifying to himself. So actually the judge being himself actually makes a whole lot of sense now that you mention it. But it's more interesting because that Matthew is a cop who is, or a detective rather. And ultimately himself is actually in some ways, maybe not explicitly, but also kind of judging others. How we mentioned a little bit on the writing process and the changes done to the judge. How many interpretations or what was the process of writing Matthew as a character? Was he always a detective or did he have different other kind of backgrounds?
So the whole detective thing, the game started as I wanted to talk about the afterlife and ethics. And I had no idea what I wanted the character to be or his story to be. I just knew this is what I wanted to do. Before I even had any sort of story, I had modeled this hallway. Like this hallway was there. I knew I wanted to have like all these doors lead to different places. And I had no idea what I was going to do after that point. For all of you that are curious, my writing process and just creating process in general is awful and you shouldn't do it. I very much like figure things out as I go.
Sure.
Like I want to make a game about this and I just dive headfirst into making it with like zero plans. So don't do that. But I did, and it kind of came about from The Last of Us.
Okay.
The Last of Us is a huge influence on me just in general. Favorite game of all time. The original script for that, Joel was a police officer.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know the details, but that thought came to me. And I was like, that raised a lot of moral dilemmas. And I thought that'd be an interesting thing to follow. The first version of the Summerland script, the kid was sick and not Matthew.
Oh, wow.
So you're okay. Trying. Yeah. So there were going to be a lot more scenes of you trying to like care for the kid at home, trying to like fix up equipment and everything, like makeshift or otherwise. And someone like brought it up to me just like one late night and was like, just messaged me out of the blue. It was like, hey, what if Matthew was the one that was sick? Like just out of nowhere. And I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot more interesting. And I went on from there. Cause for one, it gives a better like visual of how bad it is. Cause you have that first person perspective, but it also is like less cliche.
Sure.
Cause there's always that cliche of like, oh, the sick kid, take care of the kid. I feel like you never see the actual caretaker being sick themselves. And I thought that was an interesting take on it. I think at one point he was just like an average guy. There was nothing to do with his job. And like the initial game was a lot more abstract. There wasn't going to be like any voice acting other than the judge. So I'm really happy with the final product and what we've settled on. And I think it delivers the story that I wanted to tell.
Like you mentioned that the initial part of, you know, initial concept of Summerland was you trying to discuss or explore the afterlife and philosophy and ethics. How much actual research did you have to do in order to properly explore that? Because you do mention explicitly some, you know, different kind of philosophers, philosophies, and, you know, different kind of ethics.
So I'll just say like outright, I wasn't trying to like break new ground. It wasn't like I want to make strides in the field of like, no, I just, ethics are just interesting to me. In the more philosophical side of ethics, when you're thinking like, not what is right or wrong, but why are things right or wrong? I thought that was kind of cool. And I wanted to explore that more because it interested me. And the points I bring forward are very base level ethics philosophy. And I didn't do like a ton of research. I read a few articles. It sounds dumb, but I watched The Good Place, which actually has a lot of stuff about ethics in it. And I just kind of, I found a few points that I was like, you know, I want to make people who have never thought about this before, like maybe explore it a bit. And I just kind of threw these points in here. And I said, here, do with these what you will, think about it. And again, I wasn't trying to like make some grand statement. It was just kind of, I want people to think about it a little bit. Same with the afterlife. I was like, I want people to think about it just a little bit. And I'm not trying to tell people an answer or really go in depth with exploring, very base level, but that's really all I wanted to do.
And just actually, I got actually only one final question for you. At the end of Summerland, you are given the option to ultimately judge Matthew.
Yeah.
Is he basically good, a good person or a bad person? Subjectively, what do you think?
Yeah. So that's like the one question yeah. I really looked at in the outline you sent me. And I was like, I don't know how to answer this. I've been thinking for like the whole day, and I was like, oh man. I really don't know. And I don't think I want to give an answer here solely because I think people would take that as an influence.
Yeah.
And I really want people to make that decision for themselves. And I don't want my opinion to influence what they say, which is my way of avoiding the question because I don't have an answer.
But, no, that's actually not having an answer is a completely valid answer because
point of the game is you should not have an answer.
Yeah. Actually, a little bit on that. I know that was the last question, but like, was actually not having an answer, was that ever a valid option, or did you want people to make a definitive yes or no?
No, I wanted people to have to face what they feel is right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Like you're making me do right now, and I can't. But you made us do it. Yeah, no, this is hypocrisy, and it's fine. I wanted people to walk away and try to think about it. And really, I've been watching a lot of YouTube Let's Plays and streams. And my favorite part, when they like the game, of course, is when they get to the end and they just stand there for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I've been watching a ton where they're like sitting there in that like big grassy open area and not even moving or looking and just talking to the people on stream.
Yeah.
Guys, I have no idea. That's my favorite part of it. And it's a moment that I'm proud that I've made.
Yeah.
It's like that one moment of payoff at the end of the game where I'm like, man, I really did make that person think. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best moment. It's the best moment of the game. And it's a good thing. You know, a lot of games don't end particularly well or meaningful. And you managed to pull it off. So you should be proud of yourself.
I was honestly really afraid people were going to hate the ending of this game.
Well, why is that?
Because it's so open to interpretation. It's such an open-ended ending, and I was afraid people weren't going to take to that just because there was no definitive conclusion, really. It's like, you go through this journey, and you're finally faced with this final choice, and it just ends. But that's kind of, the whole thing, like the pacing of it, is kind of just like, I'm not trying to get super deep here, it's like very, again, surface level, but it's kind of like a parallel of death. Right? It opens very suddenly.
Right.
Just like death, you don't know when it's going to happen. It's very sudden and it's scary. The game opens suddenly. You're plopped into this position where you don't know what's going on. You're confused and nothing is explained to you. And you just kind of have to make your way on your own.
That's actually a fantastic point for us to end on. Connor, I do thank you very much for joining us here at Lore Party today. Anything you want to promote before we wrap up here?
Just check out the game. It is totally free on Steam, Summerland. You could check out my social medias. I'll spell a few things out here. We got my Instagram, which is Connor with an ER _W_Rush. My Twitter, which is at Fire Games Real, and that's FYRE Games. Yeah, that's about it. That's all I got. Firegames.com, FYRE.
Executive producer of the Lore Party Podcast Network is Abu Zafar. Minigame is written and produced by Michael Ferris. Original music for Minigame is composed by Lawrence Kelly. Subscribe to Minigame and all the other Lore Party podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow Minigame on Twitter at Minigame Podcast and visit our website at loreparty.com. Thank you very much for listening.